Welcome to Line One, Your Health Connection on Alaska Public Media. I'm your host today, Dr. Jay Butler. So many things in medicine are new. 10 years ago, not many people had ever heard of the Zika virus, and not many people had heard of electronic cigarettes. The latter will be our topic of discussion for today. Vaping stores are all over the road system, and emails for vaping starter kits show up in our inboxes. News has covered the rapidly emerging science and possible restrictive regulations by the Food and Drug Administration. A number of people say that they've used e-cigarettes to finally stop smoking. Others have warned that vaping could cause serious health concerns. The greatest concern expressed has been the high rate of use by teens and emerging evidence that use by teens leads to nicotine addiction and use of traditional combustible cigarettes. Joining us today here in the studio in Anchorage is to help us separate the data from the hype, Shelley Grigsby. Shelley is the manager of the Alaska Tobacco Control Program. Welcome to Line One, Shelley.
Thank you.
And returning to Line One in her new role as Alaska Chief Medical Officer is Dr. Lily Liu. Dr. Liu is a pediatrician and past president of the Alaska chapter of the American Academy of Pediatrics. Dr. Liu, welcome back to Line One.
Good morning.
So let's start with just some definitions. First of all, what is an e-cigarette and what is vaping? Shelley?
So an e-cigarette creates an aerosol by using a battery to heat up the liquid that usually contains nicotines and flavorings and other additives. The user inhales aerosol into their lungs, and they can use different, you can even deliver cannabinoids or marijuana and other drugs through those.
Okay, so it's even though it's called vaping, it's not really a vapor, it's an aerosol.
It's an aerosol.
It's a small particle of the liquid that contains whatever the desired ingredient is, nicotine, but it could be other substances, other drugs as well.
Originally, we were told that it was a water vapor, which it's not, and that's where the term vaping comes from.
Okay. So another definition, Juul. These devices now account for nearly two-thirds of vaping product sales. More than two-thirds of $1 billion just in the first half of 2018. And these devicings have to be a marketing dream come true with the name of the device becoming a verb. Kids now talk about juuling. So what is Juul and what is juuling?
So Juul is a brand name of a device for e-cigarettes or vapes or whatever, kind of like saying Kleenex instead of tissue. And pediatricians have actually learned that you can't ask kids if they use e-cigarettes because you'll get kind of a blank stare. But if you say, do you Juul, then they know what that means.
Okay. So I'm going to pause for a second while I Kleenex. Let's talk about one other term that I don't hear as much nowadays, and that's dripping. And in medicine and public health, we know what the drip is, but that's something very different. But let me point out that April is Sexually Transmitted Infection Month. But what is dripping when we're talking about e-cigarettes?
So dripping is a practice in which people they produce and inhale the vapors by placing the e-liquid drops directly onto the heated atomizer. So if you take your e-cigarette apart, it's got all those coils and things inside, and they would take those drops and put them directly on those coils.
Okay, so that sounds like it may be so very 2015 because the Juul device is actually self-contained, uses cartridges. I've seen photos of them. They look kind of like a USB device. In fact, I think you can even charge them in a USB charger. Is that correct?
It is. They look like a thumb drive and they come apart and then they can plug in and heat up the nicotine. And then they appeal to youth because they can you can easily hide them. They're right in plain sight in schools. And then those different flavor pods can be changed out whenever you want to.
Okay. Well, I was behind somebody at the red light this morning, and I thought their car was on fire for a moment, but I realized that it was the vape cloud coming out of the open window. But do all e-cigarettes produce vape clouds? Seems like one of the concerns you're describing is that the Juul could be used very subtly, maybe even in class when the teacher's at the blackboard. Not that I know anything about how that works. But.
Right. Yes, the different e-cigarettes have different clouds to them, and you can actually produce a bigger cloud if you want to, but that leads to a Juul or something. Some of the other e-cigarettes that are easily concealed, you can exhale into your clothing, which is what kids do, to hide it from the teacher. And keep in mind, they don't smell like tobacco. They have fruit flavors.
Right. And I think many have tried that with traditional cigarettes, and it doesn't work so well.
But correct.
You're saying that the smell may be like a mint or maybe fruit-flavored candy, so it may be much less detectable as a nicotine product.
Mm-hmm. So it's less detectable to teachers and also to parents.
So a few years ago, we started seeing vaping stores popping up like Starbucks all over the, at least on the road system, and also in Southeast. So is this a very recent fad, or is this technology truly new? What's the history of the e-cigarette?
We can trace it back to 1963, where they first started with e-cigarettes, but they weren't very popular then. They became popular in the U.S. around 2007, but they were expensive and not very popular. I would say that in 2015, when Juul came on the market, that's really when we really started seeing a significant increase in e-cigarettes.
Okay. So one of the great concerns with traditional combustible cigarettes is the hazardous nature of the compounds released during the burning of tobacco. E-cigarettes seem to address that concern by heating the liquid solution rather than burning, as you were describing, and thus it's able to deliver the nicotine through the aerosol. So what's wrong with that? First of all, what are the effects of nicotine on the body, and are there health concerns specific to nicotine, totally apart from inhaling burned smoke?
So one of the things about nicotine is it's one of the most addictive substances that we know, except maybe for chocolate. And I think there's probably a chocolate flavor for
e-cigarettes. Sure
but in addition, you know, the danger to kids is that we think, well, you're not burning anything, it's not bad for your lungs, but actually the vape fluids contain carcinogens. They contain metallic nanoparticles like nickel, lead, and tin that you're breathing in because you're using a heating coil, so you're getting whatever's in the solution and even on the metallic coil into your lungs. Some of the fluids contain benzene or diacetyl, which causes some long-term or permanent lung damage. And the other thing that is really significant for youth is that nicotine primes the dopamine pathways that can set up developing brains to be susceptible to the reward and addiction system for all sorts of things.
So there's certainly concerns about things in addition to nicotine. Nicotine can be addictive. Is nicotine itself harmful? Is it possible to overdose on nicotine?
Nicotine is a vasoconstrictor. And I remember when I was doing medical research, one of my colleagues was looking at baboon fetuses. And if you expose a pregnant baboon to nicotine, and there's probably some component of smoke and some component of the nicotine, but they looked at the blood flow in the umbilical cord, and it completely blanched when they're exposed to nicotine.
So vasoconstrictor means that the vessels contract down and blood flow does not occur as it normally would.
Right. They compress down. So all the nutrients and all the oxygen that's going to the developing fetus's brain and body are interrupted.
So what do we know about nicotine during pregnancy?
So, well, one of the things that they also found is that exposure to nicotine without the smoke actually breaks some of the neural connections and what they call, here's the technical term, it denervates the carotid body, which has some effects on the control of breathing in the developing fetus.
Okay. So you're listening to Line One, Your Health Connection on Alaska Public Media. Our topic of discussion today is electronic cigarettes and vaping, and we welcome you to join the conversation by calling us toll-free statewide at 1-888-353-5752. You can also contact us by email at lineone@alaskapublic.org. That's lineone at alaskapublic.org. And if you're in the Anchorage area, the local number is 550-8433. So we've talked about the smell or limited smell. Mm-hmm. I certainly notice the smell sometimes, but it's not like tobacco of e-cigarettes, and most of the liquids are flavored. I know some providers and experts in tobacco control have actually recommended that they be unflavored, that it so that it could be used primarily as a nicotine delivery device. But one area of concern has been that many of the flavors seem to be sweeter and really focus on the sweet tooth of teens. There was a report from Dartmouth University Medical Center just this past week that observed that adolescents are more likely to vape candy or fruit-flavored e-cigarettes, and we're also more likely to use a wide variety of flavors. Most flavorings are approved by the FDA, but that is for eating, not inhaling. So are there any concerns with inhaling the flavorings?
Well, I will say that we know that from 2010 to 2014, we saw an increase in calls to the poison control line. Those were incidents that happened with children under the age of 5, but that should give you some indication that those are not meant to be on your skin or to be drinking them.
Okay. So we've been talking quite a bit about use among teens, and there was recently a report from the Colorado Department of Public Health that said that more than 1 in 4 Colorado high students say they vaped in the past 30 days. The use is even higher among white students and also among gay, lesbian, and bisexual students. So how common is vaping among young people in Alaska?
So with our 2017 YRBS data, which is our Youth Risk Behavior Survey, that's how we monitor some of these things. In 2015, we had 36% of the students surveyed said that they had tried vaping at some point. That's gone up in 2017 to 40%. So it's increased already. And you need to keep in mind as well that 16% of our students say that they use these on a regular basis. And we are now down to 10% for cigarette smoking. So e-cigarettes has become more popular than cigarettes.
Okay. So yesterday, Sanjay Gupta had a story on CNN about peer education on vaping in public schools in Santa Clara County, California. He interviewed a number of students. Selena, a 17-year-old, said, "When the message comes from an adult, it sounds so antagonistic, but also like they don't understand us." I'm not going to do an imitation of a Californian teenager. But I think it's when it's coming from a friend, it means much more to the person receiving it. And Dr. Gupta points out that you can't just insert an E in front of cigarettes and expect older programs to work, especially given how the chemistry and technology of vaping has created an entirely new issue for teens developing brains. And devices have gotten smaller, sweeter, and stealthier. So What should school districts be doing to address the issues related to vaping?
So one of the things that, I mean, as part of the Tobacco Prevention and Control Program, we work with our partners and stakeholders to address these emerging issues all the time. The evidence-based practices are school policies around tobacco use, updating your policy so that e-cigarettes are part of that as well, parents, teachers, and providers should be aware that e-cigarette use is on the rise and that you can't always identify them. Like I said, they're easily concealed. They smell like fruit flavors. You don't necessarily see somebody using a vape pen. We've become pretty cognizant of that now. But these little thumb drives, and there are new ones coming on the market all the time. So being aware of what they are, the harms that they cause, updating policies so that we are trying to prevent teens from getting started and getting addicted to nicotine to begin with.
So I like that you brought up this, the peer concept, because we have the data, we understand the science, and I think that the knowledge that's out there has not kept pace with what we know about these products. But and they're almost invisible to teachers and parents, and so I think it's going to be essential that we partner with teens, because they're the stakeholders in this. It's their health that's threatened, and work with them about how to get the message across.
No one understands a teen like another teen. It does seem like some of the challenges, whether it's in education or policy development, are similar to smokeless tobacco. I think Dr. Gupta is right. You can't just conflate things that have worked in addressing cigarette smoking and expect that to work in this. But I do wonder if there's not some similarities between smokeless tobacco and e-cigarettes that maybe we can learn from. One area with smokeless tobacco that I know has been discussed is taxation. Are e-cigarette products taxed either at the federal or state level?
They're not currently taxed.
In Alaska.
In Alaska, correct. And that is, you know, part of the problem. That's one of the approaches that we use to prevent youth from accessing some of these things.
I think it'll be important to pay attention to this legislative session, because as we learn more about it, we may put some of those things in place.
Well, Surgeon General Vivek Murthy issued a report in 2016 about e-cigarette use among youth and young adults that cautioned that most nicotine addiction begins with use during adolescence. In December of 2018, Surgeon General Jerome Adams held a press conference and stated, "I am officially declaring e-cigarette use among youth an epidemic in the United States. Now's the time to take action. We need to protect our young people from all tobacco products, including e-cigarettes." And this was based on some of the data we've been discussing, but also additional data indicating that teens who vape are more likely to begin smoking than those who do not vape. So, Shelley, what is a tobacco control program to do?
Well, as I said, we partner with several different organizations, the Lung Association, Cancer Society. Rural Cap has an ambassador program, which is a peer-to-peer approach, working with teens to keep teens from getting addicted. And again, working with grantees around in small communities around the state, so that they can be kind of boots on the ground and educate and provide some awareness in their communities on the harms associated with these things.
Okay. So let's sort of try to summarize. We focused a lot on some of the health concerns about e-cigarettes, and I want to move on in a few minutes to talk about some of the potential benefits. But before we leave the topic of use by teens, which is more dangerous for teens, e-cigarettes or combustible cigarettes?
I think that they're apples and oranges. So combustible cigarettes have the impact of the carbon monoxide and the products of burning. And you mentioned smokeless tobacco. I think that e-cigarettes might be kind of an in-between, because they actually aerosolize or vaporize using heat. So that's what releases some of the toxic chemicals. But then there's the hidden risk of the things in the fluids that are not in cigarettes, like the, you know, some other kinds of carcinogens. Even some of the things that confer the flavors are harmful to your health when you inhale them.
And of course, e-cigarettes are much newer. The common use of tobacco really skyrocketed after the invention of the automatic cigarette rolling machine around the turn of the 20th century. Yet it took about 60 years to really sort out the epidemiology and issue some of the first warning reports.
Right.
And certainly if we were having this conversation 50 years ago, we would probably have an ashtray at the middle of the table here. And those of you monitoring by video would be watching us smoking as we have this conversation. So a lot changes, and I think we don't want to have the same kind of delay in recognizing potential health effects.
Well, I think one of the greatest risks that weighs more heavily on the e-cigarette side is the great appeal to youth and the great potential for addiction when you start something in your teens.
Okay. So we're going to take a break, and we'll be back in about a minute. You're listening to Line One, Your Health Connection on Alaska Public Media.
Now is a good time to make sure your immunizations are up to date. Measles outbreaks are happening as close as Washington State, a common travel destination for many Alaskans. Our public health officials are urging Alaskans to ensure that all of their immunizations, including the MMR vaccine, are current. Protect yourself and your family and the whole community. To learn more, including vaccine requirements for schools and daycares, visit immunize.dhss.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the State of Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
Welcome back to Line One, Your Health Connection on Alaska Public Media. I'm your host today, Dr. Jay Butler. Our topic is electronic cigarettes and vaping, and my guests are Shelley Grigsby, manager of the Alaska Tobacco Control Program, and Dr. Lily Liu, Alaska Chief Medical Officer. And we welcome you to join the conversation. You can give us a toll-free call statewide, 1-888-353-5752, or drop us an email at line1@alaskapublic.org. So it seems that if we're going to talk about potential health benefits from e-cigarettes, the most obvious is going to be that they may be an aid in smoking cessation. So first of all, let's just talk about what are the options for someone who wants to stop smoking. And I know there's data out there from Alaska that indicates that the majority of smokers would like to stop. But I think it was Mark Twain has been said to have written, quitting smoking is the easiest thing in the world. I've done it 100 times myself. And with all respect to people who've been able to do that, as well as to those who are trying and have not yet been successful, hang in there. But what are the options that are available, Shelley?
So going back to the science, the most successful option is using a combined approach of nicotine replacement therapy and counseling, which is how what they do with the Alaska Tobacco Quit Line. So the state supports that program, and that's where people can call 1-800-QUIT-NOW, or the phone number is...
You may shamelessly plug the quit
thank
line.
Thank you. 1-800-784-8669. That's available free of charge to all Alaskans for tobacco cessation, as well as a lot of our rural communities have their own local resources that they use, that they're sending, you know, they have counselors there in their communities that they use. We have grantees that help with that as well.
Okay.
And Shelley, I think the counseling is available to all ages, mm-hmm. but the nicotine replacement, the NRTs, meaning the patches and gums and things like that, are not available to people who are trying to quit who are less than 18.
Correct. And maybe you can speak to a little bit why that would be.
So, one of the concerns is these are nicotine replacement therapy products. And so we don't really like the idea of giving nicotine to kids because of the impact it can have on their developing brains. So this is a real challenge with the exponential increase in teen youth of e-cigarettes that sometimes have significantly higher nicotine concentrations than cigarettes do. So there's not really a good solution to this yet, but we're obviously thinking about it. And my advice would be if you know a teen, or if you are a teen who's having problems because you're already feeling the effects of nicotine addiction, talk to your pediatrician, because there are ways that you can be guided off of that. But they require prescriptions and close supervision.
So is nicotine replacement therapy in the form of patches available without a prescription?
Over the counter. You can purchase those over the counter for the patches, the gum, and the lozenges. Those are what's provided by the Quit Line as well. And they're meant to step you down. One of the studies that's come out around e-cigarette use versus a nicotine replacement, and Dr. Lim might be able to explain it better than I can, but it looks like nicotine replacement over the long term will break the addiction.
So there was an article recently in the New England Journal of Medicine, and the first part of it says that people who use e-cigarettes are actually more successful at getting off cigarettes. So they had an 18% versus a 9.9% success rate at being off tobacco, combustible cigarettes, 1 year later. But what's really interesting to me is that 80% of the ones who quit with e-cigarettes were still using e-cigarettes at a year, whereas only 9% using the nicotine replacement tools were still needing those after a year. So yes, e-cigarettes get you off combustible cigarettes, but they don't get you off nicotine.
Okay, that's very well put. So I'd like to take a call. Paul in Palmer, welcome to Line 1, your health connection.
Thanks, Dr. Butler. Say, I had a question about the max VO2 or VO2 studies regarding lung capacity, comparing e-cigarettes to combustibles. And I'll get off the line here. Thanks.
All right. Thank you, Paul. That's a great question. I don't know that we have an exercise physiologist here, but max VO2 capacity is the ability of the body to utilize oxygen through breathing during exercise. Do we know of data on this topic comparing cigarette smokers to vapers?
I don't have any specific studies that I can quote, but if you think of combustible cigarettes as having two things that harm you, one is the nicotine and one is the actual smoke with the carbon monoxide and the toxins in the smoke. So you might think that those are worse, but some of the chemicals that we've already mentioned, like the diacetyl, are actually directly damaging to lungs, and those are the things that are found in the vape fluids. So in addition to the nicotine, they may also contain compounds that are toxic to your lungs. So it may just be apples and oranges where they're harmful in different ways.
Okay. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Line 1, your health connection on Alaska Public Media. Our topic today is electronic cigarettes and vaping with guests Shelley Grigsby, manager of the Alaska Tobacco Control Program, and Dr. Lily Liu, Alaska Chief Medical Officer. And we welcome you to join the conversation by calling us toll-free statewide at 888-353-5752 or drop us an email at line1@alaskapublic.org. We've talked about some of the potential and real health risks from e-cigarettes. We've also been talking about potential benefits specifically related to smoking cessation. So, Dr. Liu, we were talking about e-cigarettes in the context of other forms of nicotine replacement therapies. Are there other medications that can assist with smoking cessation?
There are medications like, can I say a brand name?
Chantix. I will say it. So.
Is a prescription medication. That's not provided by the quit line, but is available through your own doctor. It works similarly to the nicotine replacement products. We're just not able to provide those for free through the quit line. So both of those are effective. And again, both of those are more effective at getting you off nicotine, at dealing with the addiction, whereas the e-cigarettes do seem to have some success in getting you off the smoking of cigarettes.
Okay. And if there are listeners who have successfully quit smoking by using e-cigarettes, we'd be interested in hearing your story. Of course, the plural of anecdote is not data, and so that's why I really appreciate Dr. Liu talking about the recent randomized controlled trial that compared using e-cigarettes to more traditional nicotine replacement therapies, both combined with counseling to be able to address smoking cessation. We'll also be wanting to get into some of the regulatory issues, and we have a very pertinent question by email. Cigarettes can't be flavored other than menthol, although I think the FDA has been positioning themselves to potentially ban menthol cigarettes as well. But the question is, why can vape products be flavored? Are there things we should do to change that?
Well, the FDA is trying to regulate the flavors already because we know that that's appealing to youth. That's the whole purpose, is to get youth to, fruit flavor, fruit medley, mint, all of those flavors. And one thing I want to mention, you sneak the nicotine in there. Those Juul pods, 63% of the students that are surveyed thought there was no nicotine in there at all. There's a pack of cigarettes. I mean, the nicotine is equal to a pack of cigarettes in one little pod. So those flavorings are pretty deceitful.
And some of the products that say they have no nicotine, when they were tested, they contain significant amounts.
Okay. For someone who's tried and repeatedly failed to successfully stop smoking using whether it be Chantix or nicotine replacement patches or lozenges, would you recommend trying e-cigarettes? And are there recommendations on how to use vaping products for this purpose?
There are many marketing strategies for e-cigarettes, and that's one of them that will help get you off combustible cigarettes. I think that if you're an adult whose brain is fully developed, which doesn't happen until you're in your mid-20s, then that may be a consideration. But I think we need to be honest with people and say it's probably going to be, it has a good chance of getting you off cigarettes, but it may not help you with the addiction to nicotine.
Okay.
And I think it's also important to recognize that the counseling and support that goes along with it is really important, not just the whatever strategy you use pharmacologically.
Okay. There was a report that came out in the past couple of weeks in the journal Pediatrics that reported 75% of parents who smoke cigarettes never do so in the home or in the car, but only 25% of those who vape avoid vaping indoors even when their children are present. So the assumption appears to be that exposure to secondhand vape is completely safe for kids. What do we know about this, Dr. Liu? Are there risks from secondhand vape exposure?
I think that e-cigarettes are new enough that we don't have a huge body of research, but anything that you can breathe out in a cloud and you can compare with your friends how big a cloud you can make has got to be breathable by as secondhand. So it's probably not as easy to get secondhand vape effects as tobacco smoke, which you can see hanging in the air. But if it's in the air in a cloud, it's got to be affecting secondhand breathers.
Okay. I've noticed that the approach to vaping in the United Kingdom seems to be much more permissive than in the U.S., where it seems to be more of an abundance of caution. What are your thoughts on why that is?
I think that they're figuring that out, and they're becoming a little bit more strict as we learn more about it. But when we started having automatically rolled cigarettes marketed, there was a part of our history where doctors were saying this brand of cigarettes is the healthiest. So I think as we learn, we all change as we figure out what's best.
Have a Chesterfield after dinner; it'll help with digestion.
The brand.
Yeah. And 4 out of 5 doctors have lung cancer. So tobacco products are highly regulated. That appears to be much less true for e-cigarettes. I noticed that President Trump has proposed a user fee to be imposed on vape product manufacturers to fund increased FDA oversight. What would be some of the first steps you would want to see the FDA take? Needs to be done?
Shelley's already mentioned the restriction of flavors, and I just got back from the annual leadership forum for the American Academy of Pediatrics, because I actually still have the privilege of being the chapter president for Alaska. And
I was fast-forwarding your career, Dr. Liu. I apologize.
Well, in the top 10, which are the highest priority issues for children's health, is a resolution about e-cigarettes, because the use is increasing so quickly. I think from 2016 to 2017, the use in teens increased by 75%, and the next year it increased further by 86%. So pediatricians and people who care about children's health are really concerned that we need to do something about this now.
Okay.
So let me answer your other question. One of the first things that we can do is change the age of purchase, and that they're calling these T21 laws. So several states have already restricted buying e-cigarettes where you have to be over 21.
And for tobacco products, a number of states have also done that. Now, in Alaska, the current age where one can legally purchase tobacco products is 18?
Is 19.
19, okay. And does that also apply to vaping products?
It does. We just amended one of our possession by a minor law last year, it went into effect in January, what it considers an e-cigarette a tobacco product. And that allows us to, I got distracted with something in the window there. That allows, it makes it illegal for someone under the age of 19 to have a e-cigarette just like a tobacco product.
All right. Well, you're listening to Line One, Your Health Connection on Alaska Public Media. We're discussing e-cigarettes and vaping, and we welcome you to join the conversation statewide at 1-888-353-5752 or email us at lineone@alaskapublic.org. Our experts today are Shelley Grigsby, manager of the Alaska Tobacco Control Program, and Dr. Lily Liu, Alaska Chief Medical Officer. So in respect to taxes on cigarettes, a number of localities also do that, and somebody's dropped an email to point out that Matsu Borough Assembly recently enacted a 55% tax on the wholesale value of anything sold in vape shops in an effort to curb youth access. So is that happening in a number of areas of Alaska, or is the Matsu leading the way on this?
Well, going back to what Dr. Liu was talking about with T21, a lot of our communities are doing work on their own, where they're increasing the taxes on tobacco products, e-cigarette products. Sitka, for example, passed their own community T21. So Matsu is following along with a lot of other communities that are concerned about this.
Are there other boroughs or municipalities that are imposing a tax?
Yes, all the time.
Okay.
So to call
out...
Can
you be more specific?
Yeah, that's really hard. I know that Dillingham, Bethel, lots of communities are always looking at increasing their taxes around tobacco products, including e-cigarettes in there.
Okay. Dr. Liu, I noticed you were being very hesitant to endorse e-cigarettes as maybe a third-level approach to smoking cessation, and I think I should point out that these products are not currently FDA-approved for this purpose. I think one of the questions that comes up when we don't have FDA regulation of a product that is being used to literally treat a health condition is that the best advice is let the buyer beware. So I think question I'd like to raise is, can I be confident that what is on the label of my vaping solution is accurate? For example, there was a report in the Journal of Addiction Medicine that tested 35 solutions labeled as nicotine-free, and we haven't really talked about that, but particularly among teens, it's sometimes popular just to vape for the sake of producing the cloud. And in testing of those solutions, some level of nicotine was detected in over 90%. And even though most were in very low levels, one was 24 milligrams per milliliter, which is actually a tad higher than some of the standard solutions that are marketed. So is there any way to know what really is in the solution?
I would say absolutely not. If they're not going to be forthcoming about the nicotine, then who can tell what other substances are in those fluids? And this is another way to put something into your body. So I would just caution people.
Well, we were originally told that this is water vapor, and we now know that that's not true. So,
okay, and it's not just for the physicists to talk about the difference between a vapor and an aerosol.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So we're going to go to a break for the stations down the line. You're listening to Line 1, Your Health Connection on Alaska Public Media. We'll be right back.
Line 1, Your Health Connection is supported by a grant from the Alaska Mental Health Trust and listeners like you.
Welcome back to Line 1, Your Health Connection on Alaska Public Media. I'm your host today, Dr. Jay Butler. We're talking about e-cigarettes and vaping with Shelley Grigsby, manager of the Alaska Tobacco Control Program, and Dr. Lily Liu, Alaska Chief Medical Officer. And we welcome you to join the conversation by calling in toll-free statewide at 1-888-353-5752. You can also drop us an email at line1.com. L-I-N-E-O-N-E at alaskapublic.org. So, Shelley, we were talking about the concept of let the buyer beware, and I want to talk a little bit about internet sales as we talk about regulation so that these products can be safer. I get a lot of spam emails when I look over in that junk email box advertising cannabidiol or CBD vaping solutions. So as you pointed out very early on, that e-cigarettes can be used to deliver a wide variety of drugs. But what do we really know about these solutions that can be purchased online?
So it's harder to monitor it when it's purchased online, obviously. And I want to point out that the marijuana shops sell CBD oil specifically for these e-cigarettes.
Right.
So it's available already. Going back to the youth access piece of that, we know that a small percentage of the youth that are purchasing these things are purchasing over the internet, but a lot of them are just getting from friends or borrowing from other people. So, it's not just from being purchased that our youth have access to these things.
And you had also mentioned earlier that parents are less likely to hide their vaping than their cigarette smoking from their kids. And kids learn from their parents. They want to grow up to be their parents. And so there may be vape devices in the homes that that kids have access to. I know that you're always interested in smart use of marijuana. And so there's an interesting study looking at 14-year-olds.
I hope we're going to qualify that a little bit. Like smart use of anything.
Yes, but there was a study done on adolescents in Los Angeles, and they looked at 14-year-olds, and they found that 14-year-olds who had ever vaped were about four times as likely to be later users of tobacco, and we know the negative health effects of that, and also of marijuana.
Okay. Well, I know one of the challenges in assessing the health effects of smoking marijuana has been the fact that until fairly recently, the majority of marijuana smokers have also smoked tobacco. So it sounds like that association between tobacco smoking and marijuana may now actually extend to vaping and marijuana smoking. Is that a fair statement based on what you just said?
I think so. The waters are muddy because there's co-use of multiple substances, and also because there's the smoking of those and also the edibles and the vaping and, you know, the differential appeal to youth. And it's not only the flavors, it's the colorful, attractive devices.
Okay. So it sounds like the bottom line, again, is let the buyer beware right now. I know there was a report out of Salt Lake City that caught my eye a couple months back of a cluster of ER evaluations for people who had synthetic cannabinoid toxicity, or people might know it more as spice, and what they had used was labeled as a CBD solution that they had purchased online, but it actually contained some of the synthetic cannabinoids similar to what's in spice, which we've certainly seen problems with in Alaska and really all across the country.
Right, right. Well, and again, going back to if we're trying to keep youth from engaging in this, if we don't, if parents don't know what your kids are putting in an e-cigarette as well.
Okay. So I'd like to take a call. Speaking of muddy water, Chris, I think, has a very good question about where are some of the data coming from. So, Chris, welcome to Line 1, your health connection.
Good morning. I love your show.
Thank you. Do you have a question?
Yeah, I do. Well, you know, and there's a lot of stuff comes to mind as I'm listening to this. I wanted to say it just seems like there's, for one thing, you don't have any counterpoints there to work with. And I'm wondering if, you know, a lot of this, because the laws that we're making are going to affect so many people, you know, when you guys make these laws, you say, well, we wanted to expand the taxation on it and whatnot, and that somehow is going to stop, you know, teenagers from using. And, you know, that brings up one question about it. Another question is, like, you know, I was in the military at 17. So, you know, you're telling me I can't smoke or, you know, any of that. You know, I can go out and die for my country, but I can't have a cigarette or vape. I think that's really unfair. And then the other point I wanted to make, and this is where I wanted to ask you, is where are you guys getting this data to support that vaping is dangerous? And I'll give you an example. I used to smoke. I smoked up until I was 30, and I quit smoking. I didn't do anything until I was about, I don't know, 48, and I discovered vaping. And now, while I can't smoke a cigarette, I physically cannot, it hurts, but I can vape with no problems, and I haven't had any trouble at all. So I'm wondering, where does the data for vaping come from for you guys, and is there really any data right now to support your theories?
Okay, thank you, Chris.
Chris,
Dr. Liu.
So I want to first just say thanks for your service to our country. And if you're an adult who's vaping, that's fine. I just want you to understand what we're learning about the chemicals that are in the vape fluids. And like I said, it's kind of apples and oranges between cigarettes and vaping. And if you found something that you enjoy and your brain is fully developed, then we have no objection to that. But the concern is that brain development does happen into your mid-20s, and the marketing for these e-cigarettes and vape products seems to be very directed towards youth, which is a great business practice, because if you can build your clientele and they're gonna spend decades and a lifetime using your product, that's good business. But the references are in peer-reviewed journals. We're happy to provide them. And what we know, we already know that there are health effects of tobacco, and we know there's convincing evidence that there's increased tobacco use with teen vaping. And so those are pretty clear, and we are happy to provide you with any of those references.
So, Dr. Liu,
it's not the nicotine that's harmful, it's the other chemicals beside the nicotine.
The nicotine isn't
what's giving you cancer.
Well, the nicotine is addictive, but the other chemicals that are in the fluids can be harmful in various ways.
So, Dr. Liu, in terms of Chris's experience, would you agree that vaping is a safer alternative to smoking combustible cigarettes? And it also sounds like he was successful at stopping smoking through using e-cigarettes.
Right, and that's tough to do. So congratulations on that. But I think they're just different harms, and as we all choose what we do that give us pleasure, we should just know about what we're doing.
All right. Well, thank you for joining us, Chris. Have an email that I think follows up nicely to what Chris just said. The writer says they successfully quit smoking for 2 years by using e-cigarettes, and it worked very well. They were able to control the amount of nicotine in the liquid and work their way down to a 0% solution. She contrasts that to the experience of her husband, who was not able to stop smoking, and he moved on And she moved on to using the Juul, but unfortunately, she said she was not able to regulate the nicotine that was in the pod, and found that again she was really struggling with addiction to nicotine, and eventually switched back to combustible cigarettes. So she is trying to quit again using lozenges, but she offers a little bit of caution there in terms of particularly related to the Juul. Now, I'm not. I don't know if Juuls come in nicotine-free cartridges or not, but
I believe all of the Juul cartridges do have some nicotine, and it probably varies according to what flavor you choose. But that's very consistent with that study suggesting that, yes, you can get off cigarettes, but it's harder to get off the nicotine. And, of course, those are statistics, and I celebrate anyone who's able to use any strategy to get off of an addiction. But the data does suggest that it's really hard to get off the nicotine.
Okay. And for folks who are joining late, we're sort of talking about the difference between, this is all new technology, but the Juul e-cigarette and the more traditional e-cigarette. Man, things go fast in the 21st century. So how do they differ in terms of the amount of nicotine, and what's the potential risk you see there?
So with the Juul, we do know that there's as much nicotine in one pod of a Juul as a pack of cigarettes. And so then you are left to control how often you take a puff of that, really, and how quickly you're going to go through a pack of cigarettes. As opposed to like the traditional, the traditional juices that you would kind of mix or put in there, those came in varying levels of nicotine.
Okay.
So one thing about, I think the Juul cartridge is pretty contained, but we've seen a significant number of poisonings called in with these fluids for e-cigarettes. And between 2012 and 2017, there were over 8,000 liquid nicotine poisonings in kids less than 6 years old. And they're not Juuling or vaping. They're just finding something in the household that poses a risk to them. So they also, in the years 2015 to 2017, they had 2,035 explosions or burns in emergency rooms in the U.S. And remember, the use of these products is increasing exponentially. So we're tracking whether those incidents go up. You know, most things we do have some risk associated with them, but a risk to young children from having the liquids for e-cigarettes is kind of a new thing.
Yeah, I'm aware of at least one instance where there was fatal toxicity from nicotine consumption. I think that was in New York State. How many cases related to explosion of a e-cigarette did you say?
2,035, and that was in the years 2015 to 2017,
okay.
And use has increased since then.
So pretty uncommon, but still of concern. So Ashley dropped us an email. Thank you, Ashley. And she asks, what role does the tobacco industry play in the marketing and promotion of e-cigarettes?
So a lot of the tobacco companies are purchasing e-cigarettes and marketing those. If you think about it from the tobacco industry point of view, secondhand smoke's a problem, and you don't have that with e-cigarettes. So we are seeing that a lot of those manufacturers are now the ones who are marketing e-cigarettes instead. And you can look and see that they actually kind of look the same as the packs of cigarettes. The colorings, the logos are similar.
Okay.
And the tobacco companies made a lot of money on campaigns like Joe Camel, who was appealing to youth. And so maybe it's not illegal right now. So maybe they're seizing this business opportunity.
Okay.
Yeah, they are marketing through some of the reality TV stars and celebrities.
Okay. So, you know, when we think about regulations, let's talk about the federal level. If e-cigarettes are being produced as a tool for nicotine replacement therapy, as some of the manufacturers and retailers have claimed, why do they even need to be flavored?
That's a good question.
Okay. Well, maybe there's a caller who would like to address that question. Although we're running out of time quickly, if anybody'd like to get to us quickly, call in toll-free statewide, 1-888-353-5752, or drop us an email at line1@alaskapublic.org. So,
can I say something
sure.
about
Dr. Liu?
Tobacco companies and flavors? So they're actually now moving to ban the menthol flavor. And the reason for that is not the youth marketing issue, but they found that there are disparities in marketing and therefore disparities in health outcomes related to tobacco in communities of color. So that's the reason that they're changing that legislation.
Okay, so it's a health disparities issue.
Right.
Interesting. So let's sort of move to some wrap-up discussion here. Shelley, if I want to stop using tobacco, no matter what the product is, cigarette, e-cigarette, smokeless tobacco, where can I go for help?
So we would suggest you go to Alaska's Tobacco Quitline. And the number for that is 1-800-784-8669 or 1-800-QUIT-NOW. If you, for more information, you could also Google Tobacco Free Alaska. That's a website. It will drive you to the Quit Line and give you more information on resources around the state.
Okay. So, Dr. Liu, what do you think is the bottom line on vaping and electronic cigarettes?
I think it's really an exponentially increasing problem of youth health. And the problems include the hidden harms, the marketing and flavors appeal to youth, the leading to later combustible tobacco use, and really the propensity for addiction once those dopamine pathways get greased. So I think we need to talk to learn about this, share the data, talk to our kids and screen for this, and engage our peer networks.
Okay. Shelley, what would you add to that?
So I would add that we have seen a lot of success with cigarette smoking in youth. I mean, we're down from 38% in the state to under 10% with our youth, but e-cigarettes are completely different and they're on the rise. And so this is something we need everybody to get behind. We use taxation, policies, all of those things to manage manage tobacco. Those strategies need to now be put in place for e-cigarettes as well.
And I assume that some of those regulations may also address advertising of these products.
Yes.
Okay. So thank you, Shelley. Thank you, Dr. Liu, for joining us today. I want to thank all of you for listening. I want to let you know that this will be my last show as host, at least for a while. I'm going to be stepping away from the microphone because of requirements for some out-of-state work for some time to come. But I really want to thank the management and staff here at Alaska Public Media for all the encouragement and guidance provided over the past year as a Greenhorn host. And thank you to all of you who've also provided feedback to me. And I have to particularly give a shout out to BD Trantina for really coaching me very early on, starting with some fundraising efforts on live on the air. So Line 1 will be back next week with host Prentice Pemberton. Prentice will be talking with Anchorage High School students who will be talking about the stigma of mental health through storytelling. They'll be discussing how today's youth think about mental health and what they are doing to advocate for awareness and treatment. Zakiya McCummings is Line 1's producer. Jamin Ammon Swenson edited our web content and served as our sound engineer today. This is Dr. Jay Butler wishing you a healthful life informed. This is Alaska Public Media.
Line 1 is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Learn more about Line 1 and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life informed. This is Alaska Public Media.